Welcome to Tune In 2022. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino, your astrologer for the next hour or so. This is the reading for Leo, Leo Rising, and Leo Moon, and anyone who loves them. The astrology of our moment as it influences your various different charts may seem a little bit unduly harsh, as if there is tension and where you may seem to keep running into limits, in particularly with other people, which is most of what life ends up being about. And this might be a sharp contrast to what was going on about a year ago at the time of the solstice, when there was the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn on your seventh house cusp, which is Aquarius. But most astrologers don't really understand Aquarius, and we are in very unusual times when there's a kind of Aquarius going on. A kind of a overuse of the concept of we're in this together and some form of a collective reality being meaningful is being quite exploited. And the nature of your chart is that you stand and face a world that feels a lot like Aquarius. That's your seventh, and your seventh describes your relationships, and it also describes your sense of your environment. And Aquarius has two distinct facets, one of which is that it can really show up as the technical environment because of its connection to electricity, but it can also show up as the human environment. And these days, the human environment and the technical environment are being merged. And this is a frightening prospect, and one that I think people are taking way too casually. However, you are experiencing all of this, and right now you are living with Saturn in your seventh house. And when Saturn is in the seventh house, that can represent the sense of limits in the relationship environment, and that can include situations that that don't serve you in some way, ending, going away, or being taken away. The other thing Saturn does is it focuses the topic of its house and compels people to face their fears associated with that topic. And of course, we all have the fear of abandonment, and certainly anyone with a strong Aquarius in their chart is going to have an innate and inherent desire to be social and to be around people. And Saturn in your seventh is describing the antisocial nature of our times. All of this constant, never-ending warning about how dangerous everyone is, and how dangerous eating dinner with people is, and how dangerous singing is, and all of this stuff. This is all a bunch of superstition. There's no truth to this. And by truth, I mean verifiable, empirical, scientific truth. But what there is a situation where people are very susceptible to their fear, and also wanting to impress others with how thoughtful they are and all of that. And this does not inherently lead to a good place, to a better place, to a healthier, stronger, less fearful place. As far as I can tell, we are in a kind of a death spiral that is being perpetuated in part by these superstitious approaches to what we're told are problems, and then also the profound impact on our ability to relate to one another as social beings, which is what humans are and what humans need to be. And social does not just mean tribal, though you're probably experiencing quite a bit of that. Social means the ability to relate to one another freely, to say what we want to say, and to feel what we need to feel, and in particular, to not be so harshly judged for what might only be an opinion or an idea or a way of conducting oneself in the world that now can seem to lead to outright open war between people and acts of war like economic blockades, i.e., you cannot eat food in my house because you are some kind of a danger, hypothetically speaking. We're hearing a lot of this. And this is a fact for you that I think is illustrated by Saturn, that there is a sense of division and limitation, and it's particularly affecting you because most of that division and limitation is going on in the house that happens to represent relationships in your chart and is also important in every chart because of the nature of people needing one another. This, let's say, set of scenarios is going to increase as Saturn leaves and then Pluto enters your opposite sign. And so if you wish to remain a free, autonomous, and independent person, you're going to need your own rules of travel. You're going to need your own social policies. It is probable that you are going to need to do something in your own home so that you are not living by the rules and subjected to the fears and abject terrors of people who just maybe are not so interested in peace of mind. So everything I say is going to have some, in this reading, is going to have some reflection back to the fact of all this Aquarius happening in the seventh house. And it is by no means all bad. This is the thing. Saturn has a way of giving more than it takes away, especially if you let Saturn take away that which does not need to be there. And Saturn has a get serious approach to life that would be helpful. And Saturn, I think above all else, demands integrity and accountability, which is always going to be to yourself first and to others second. If you're not accountable to yourself, well, how then can you be accountable to other people, right? If you don't have a bookkeeper, you know, how do you prepare for an audit? Well, you want to have a bookkeeper. That's the thing. And bookkeeping, as far as I'm concerned, is, you know, the essence of personal accountability. So on the spiritual level, keep good books. Now, having introduced your reading with a look at your opposite sign, let's take a look at what's going on in Leo, because that's the kind of primary identification and the astrology that represents the feeling of who you are before you open your mouth, before you know, before you introduce yourself or say anything to anyone. It's both mood and affect. It's how you appear to people. It's how you feel on the inside. And I'm picking up a few different things going on in Leo, none of them that you're likely to read about anywhere else. These are, though, points that I've covered for many years, and but they're not ones that even I speak about commonly. And I do mention a few minor planets, but let's take a look at what's in Leo. So the first thing, and I think the real theme setter of Leo, is a point called Varuna. Varuna is a classical Kuiper object discovered in 2000. It's got minor planet catalog number 20,000. And so you know the astronomers thought they had a big discovery when they give it one of those honorific numbers. And so they matched their major discovery in 2000 with the number 20,000 Varuna. And Varuna represents a number of different things, but I think to me the most important one that it it stands in as one of the one of the cycle of deities, you know, that they tend to cycle through cultures and show up in different forms. But this is the one that's about the enforcement of contracts and making sure that you are in full integrity on all of your agreements. The mythology of Varuna, you know, promises punishment for not doing so. That is actually rarely the case in our culture, where people are not honoring their agreements all the time, whether they're normal contracts or sacred contracts. So I think all agreements are pretty sacred. I mean, that's what humanity is built on. If it's not built on guilt, it's based on the Dharma of keeping our commitments to one another. So remember that for the foreseeable future, you know, we're talking 10, 20 more years or so. I haven't done the math on it, but Varuna is going to be in Leo, and it's certainly there now. The second thing going on in Leo that is of long-term significance is a hypothetical point, one of the TNPs, not TNOs. It's a point, not an object, called Solaris. And Solaris has the basic sensation of things coming out of nowhere. So once you know that that possibility exists and that things can come out of nowhere, it's helpful to be paying attention to where things might come out of, since in reality nothing comes out of nowhere. Everything pretty much is the result of a cause or intent, the result of some action taken. And therefore, it is likely that things that seem to come out of nowhere did not come out of nowhere. Did I skip this from Vulcanus to Solaris? Let's stick with Solaris. So this is a centaur. We'll come back to Vulcanus. I have them written right next to each other, and I think I skipped a groove on my record. So let's go from Varuna to Solaris. Solaris has this idea of things coming out of nowhere, and they can be transformational experiences, they can be harmful experiences, but once you know that something has the possibility to come out of nowhere, then it's up to you to study the intent and the causes of things happening and what people are actually saying and feeling and doing around you, and you know, what the nature of your actual relationship to them is, in ways that require going deeper than the surface, in ways that require you to understand the influence that you have on people, to understand how they actually feel, to respond when they say something that has an impact on your life, or what they say about you having an impact on their life. And this is all well described by Saturn in the seventh, because Saturn in the seventh is about others setting boundaries on you, and then your choice of whether to respect or work with or disregard those boundaries. So you need to be paying attention to what people say. So this relates to the agreement idea of Varuna, and it relates to how nothing really comes out of nowhere. Everything is a result of some action taken in the past. We're going to come back to that when we go to Pisces and the eighth house. Finally, there's a point called Vulcanus, and this is a hypothetical point. I do use a good few of these, and I have found them to be helpful, because they guide me in a way, and they represent energies that don't exist so much in the natural planets. But this is Vulcanus, and it's a lot of energy coming up from the Earth, and it's also about knowing your own strength. The problem is that you are likely to have more energy than you know what to do with. And when that is true, you want to really allocate your energy well and make sure that you're not wasting it and not putting yourself in any situation where you or someone else could get seriously hurt based on your you might say, misallocation of your energy. So all that's going on, and it could be that when things seem to seem to go out of control or come out of nowhere, you want to look at your habits and how you allocate your energy and, in particular, your attention. There's one more very important point in Leo, and I've mentioned it a number of times, and it's been there for a long time. I'm not sure how long we're really talking. One of these things that takes 15 years or more to go through a sign, and that's Silanunum. Silanunum is a creation deity. I forget whose. It is in the 300-year realm, so it's a classical Kuiper object. And Silanunum is reminding you that you don't have to hold up the sky. The thing to do if you want to uphold your side of the Dharma of any situation is to make sure that you're fulfilling your end of any contract or agreement. So you don't have to hold up the whole world, and that's really good news for you. All you really have to do is your little part in your environment and make sure that you have the necessary understanding of your obligations and commitments, and to beware of the idea of holding up the sky as a kind of a substitute for what you know that you personally have to do. So it's not necessary for you to solve every problem or everyone's problem or to take on more than you can, but where you are somewhere, where there are agreements, where there are understandings, it's essential that you be the person who is always prompting yourself to be paying attention to them. So that is that's a look at your first and your seventh, and they both are giving this related theme of contracts and agreements. That's a little miniature economy, and it will following your contracts and agreements and changing them when you need to change them and being clear and collaborative with people about this will most certainly help you and allow you to be in these times in a constructive and collaborative way with people. And that's very important now. And we're going through enormous changes, and you are witnessing those changes happening very fast right in front of your eyes. And in the midst of that, it is a good idea to get a hold of some traditions that you respect. And I would suggest that those traditions be in the more formal realm of our relationships, of making sure that you are honest with people and that you are deferential when you need to be deferential. If there's a situation calling for your leadership, that you offer yourself and that you be a bit old-fashioned in the way that you conduct your relationships. I know that Aquarius has this newfangled feeling to it and can be seem rather gleamy and glossy, but the other side of Aquarius is that it has a deep traditional streak in terms of how human society is organized and how people relate to one another. And so honor those social norms and honor the, the social framework and the basic, rules for getting along with people without being a slave to them. It does not take much, for example, to be polite. It does not take much to honor in some way the chain of command. It doesn't take much to seek input from people and to be the example you want. To demonstrate for people what you feel is the right thing to do. And I think, above all else, the right thing to do is being a person who is good for your word. Let's look at two more angles of the fixed cross before we take a break. The fixed cross is pretty active and exciting. And by the way, I've got a video on YouTube. If you go to the Planet Waves YouTube channel, the shortcut to get there is planetwaves.tv. And you'll see there's I think it's one of the more popular in the series, is the video on the nature of the fixed signs for 2022. One of the biggest clues what's going on for you is coming out of your 10th place. That's Taurus, 10 signs away from Leo. And that's the equivalent of right on top of your chart or solar chart. And the 10th is the zone in the chart that is about being accountable to the world, accountable to others. I think of the 10th as being the one that goes all the way to the top, and the top in this case has to be you. You have to be the person who's ultimately responsible for what you do, what you feel, what you choose, what you what you say you need. And with Taurus on this house, you are typically accustomed to having a fairly stable ride on the professional front. Taurus thrives on stability. It believes in persistence. Taurus is not the kind of sign signifying energy that would have anything to do with disposing of people needlessly or dispensing with protocols and all that. But what's going on now is that Uranus is in Taurus. This goes back to early 2018, so we're about halfway through with that. In fact, as I'm looking at this chart right now, what have we got? No, not quite halfway through. 2018 to 2019, 2021. So there's about four more years of Uranus and Taurus. It's going to be quite exciting. It has proven to be so. And what is up with the relationship of your 10th house in Taurus, known for its stability and for your persistence and in your mission, is that Uranus is jumping in there and scrambling things up. Uranus in this part of your chart is quite antithetical to what Taurus normally offers in terms of the speed of change, and another one of those planets where the sensation of change can be out of nowhere, as if you had no idea what was happening. And it is necessary that you participate in the changing values of the world, but that you do so in a way that is not oppressive to you or compromising of your integrity, but rather that you be inventive and that you use your beautiful mind to find solutions to problems and solutions to the challenges of life that we face. Be a little innovative in your leadership. There is some tension being pulled between Saturn and Aquarius, your relationship house, and Uranus in Taurus, which is kind of like your highest level business relationship house. There's information in the 6th also, but there's more for you in the 10th. This calls for striking a balance, and you may fear that there's tension between what you want and what your environment supports. You may feel that you have a lot of good ideas that nobody wants to listen to. Well, it's up to you to form the relationships and to not expect people to trust you only because of who you perceive yourself to be, or what your track record is, but because you've established a relationship with them that would lead them to trust the kinds of ideas that you might have that would change something much larger than you. Uranus in the 10th is also about a point of gathering. There are a number of those in your chart. The fixed signs right now have this theme of gathering going on, which influences and affects everyone. But Uranus there is saying, don't think that you have to in some way work alone toward your goals. Make sure that you build a team around your goals, and you know, make the work a little bit lighter. Speaking of assistance, one of the points currently in Taurus, and it's been there for a while, and I think that it is a deep influence, is called Albion. You've known, you've heard me refer to this many times as 1992 QB1. Well, it was finally named a couple of years ago because the discoverers didn't want someone else naming their planet. And this, by the way, was the first planet ever discovered beyond Pluto. And it kept its provisional name because the discoverers were not interested in, you know, essentially putting the stamp of their ego onto it. But after more than, well, I guess about more than almost 30 years later, they relented. I know these people. They relented and they chose a name. And the thing is that this Albion, so the theme of QB1 is the assistance that you provide to others. And this is in your house of leadership and example setting. And QB1 is associated with the deeply personal realm. It really is not about the professional realm, though some of the gifts a QB1 can offer can be professionalized. But most of what QB1 is about is making sure that you hold space for the human element, that you recognize what people are going through, and that you do your best to put yourself out and to be of support, and in potentially deep ways that may not be appropriate for most employment situations. But this is a situation where you can safely go to the human level, you know, when appropriate, or when you feel trusting enough of someone, and make sure that you're available to really be the largest and most encompassing person that you can be. That's going to be crucial to your ability of forming trusting relationships with others. So you have this very sublime and stabilizing energy in your 10th, talking about a responsibility that you have to the world and to others. And then you have Uranus, which is anything but a responsible influence. And so you're going to need to listen to that, and I think not be subject to winds and capricious impulses coming out of your psyche, and never, ever playing fast and loose with professional obligations, with professional commitments, with your career in any way, but rather making sure that you are ever a responsible person, and that mean, you know, that includes being responsible with the ideas that you have. And I think as much as anything, you know, constantly reality checking to make sure that you are awake at the wheel of life. And so professionally, it's a very interesting kind of mixed bag, and you seem to be in a real transition around what it is that you feel called to do and what you want to do. And this may be in some way profoundly life-altering. It may be that you are coming in contact with different necessities for how you want to express yourself. You may be seeing that certain things do not work. And this is, as far as I can tell, a description of what's going on right now in Capricorn, including the Venus retrograde in Capricorn. And so let's take a break, and I will begin the next part of this discussion with a look at what's going on in Cap, your sixth house of work and wellness, and then move through the houses and end up in Aries. And I think we will learn a little bit about how you feel about the world that you're living in. All right. So this is a recording of the sound of Jupiter. the way that astrology works is that topic areas, which are houses, can be woven together by theme and also by the positions and movements of the planets. There's an inherent relationship between house 10, which is usually the bigger notion of one's career and one's life purpose, and house 6, which is the more everyday approach to life and you might say, getting things done. The 6, though, is more tangible. It's more, let's say, it's a more real place. It's not so much aspirational as it is about what we need to be doing now and what you actually do occupy yourself with, and how you feel from day to day doing that kind of thing. So there's an interesting notion in that both of these work-related houses, house 10, accountability, fame, profession, and house 6, your daily work and how you feel about it, and even the environment where you do work, they're both earth placements. And so this gives you a lot of grounding, but it also calls for a lot of grounding and a methodical approach to what you're doing. Both Capricorn and Taurus like stability. And so this is to suggest that you are someone who could very well and probably does value stability in your professional affairs, and yet at the moment the world is unraveling, and then second you have Uranus moving through your 10th house. That's shaking things up and potentially leading you to act in ways that are not necessarily accountable to authority and are not quite working as well for you. But there's also lots of ideas, and so you want to get those ideas going. You're going to need to use the tools and the methods and what is available. All right, so let's go to house number 6. And why the jump? Well, Taurus, your career, is ruled by Venus. And we find Venus in Capricorn now, recently stationed retrograde and making a series of conjunctions to Pluto. And so here we have the planet that describes your professional activities showing up in the sign and house that describe your daily activities. The long-range goals and fame and accountability now are coming home to your day-to-day work and efforts, and in a sense being made immediate and local. And what we have is Venus retrograde conjunct Pluto, and this is suggesting some kind of a fairly large reassessment, reevaluation, transformation, and potentially regeneration of your most cherished goals. So this is going to last for a while, and the most basic message is saying really pay attention to what you're doing, pay attention to the nature of your work relationships, and also be willing to learn and change and grow. As a fixed sign, that's not always that easy for you. Adapting a lot is not necessarily a thing that you like to do. You're more someone who likes to be at the center of things and allow them to adapt to you. But in this case, you're definitely in a position where you have to be making adjustments and adaptations and changes. This is going to last a while. It's a major event of 2021, even though the Venus retrograde starts December 19th. It's one of the things that sets the tone for everyone, and in particular for you, given all the emphasis on professional growth that is in your life and this process of reinvention that you may have only experienced at your Saturn return or your Uranian opposition, depending on how old you are. Okay, so the thing to remember here is that there has to be give and take in any work and professional environment, and also that your largest goals are going to come from kind of assembling together a whole bunch of seemingly smaller decisions that will add up to the bigger purpose that you feel that you have. But now's the time to really keep grounded, and by grounded I mean sticking to things every day, not like saying, okay, I work 9 to 5. Now's not the time to have these kind of arbitrary rules, when what you really need to be doing is basically throwing your life into what you want to accomplish. Now, the sixth house in your chart is Capricorn. That's also ruled by Saturn. Saturn is in the seventh. And I keep picking up on the seventh house Saturn for you as this thing that's a bit of a harsh mistress and that's wanting you to, be right and to pay attention to the necessities of your environment. And there's no question that you're in this kind of a space. We can see that from Saturn showing up there, which is holding line and attempting to set some form of an example. And it may seem like, really, this is no fun, but you can get there if you you can get there. You just have to get there. That's the thing. Okay. So we talked a lot about the seventh. Now, what's transitioning from the seventh into your eighth is Jupiter. So Jupiter spent basically most of 2020 in Aquarius, made a little bit of a visit to Pisces. Now it's going to come back to Pisces, and between December 28th, 9th or so, and May, go clear across your eighth house. Now, what is that about? The eighth house is about agreements, where we began. It's about contracts and agreements. And this is not an easy house, easy sign energy to have on the house associated with contracts and agreements, right? Every eighth house is about contracts and agreements, but you can have any sign on the eighth house you happen to have in your solar chart. And if you're Leo rising, your whole sign chart with Leo rising Pisces on the eighth. And Pisces is not known for its fantastic boundaries. So where you see Pisces in a situation calling for agreements really calls for an enhanced attention to those things. We're seeing this coming from many aspects of your chart, many different angles, starting with the most important planet in your first house. So now, complicating matters in terms of contracts is Neptune is in the eighth. Long visit, 15 years, something like that. Began like in 2011 or 12 or something. And this is making it foggy. And one of the things you have to do is to be absolutely clear about what is expected of you and what you expect in return. And also, Neptune is always going to require that you give a little more than you think that you're getting. Neptune is often going to have the sense of, okay, I want this, I need this, I'm going to have to make a little sacrifice here. I may have to do more, work harder, make some kind of a compromise. And I'm not saying this as a way of life or a religion, but more of an understanding that that there are times in your life where you've got to put out a little more than you think and get a little bit less than you might deserve. But where this changes is when we put Jupiter into the eighth. Well, that has the sensation of a windfall. That has the sensation of a benefit of some kind coming to you. And it may be the benefit of, first of all, bringing a lot of substance there. Jupiter's a denser planet than Saturn. Bringing substance there and holding your attention there and understanding that whatever you actually want, whatever benefits or rewards you get from life always come from some form of a relationship and always come from some form of an exchange of value of some kind. Now, there are challenges in your eighth that include a point called Nessus, which is a recent and very long-term arrival. It's the third centaur. And Nessus, too, has a contractual feeling in that Nessus is about the results when one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, and then you wonder how things got to be that way, and then you can trace it all the way back. Most people don't trace it all the way back, and you can see that there's a point of origin of all of this. And so you want to watch your points of origin of things, and the presence of Nessus emphasizes Nessus in your eighth, right? That's marriage, death, dowry, the substance of the bride, inheritances, legacies, other people's investments in you. You know, you want to be watching your agreements carefully. It's very easy to slip on your agreements, and it would be easy to slip on not merely what is expected of you, but what you are committed to that maybe you don't remember, or maybe you don't like that as much, or you didn't really want to agree to that. And so there's very important advice here coming that's saying, don't agree to anything that you can't actually fulfill. And when you have, you've got to do something about it. And also, don't agree to something that you don't necessarily like. Now, we cannot always get out of that, but part of maturity and figuring out a way to, you know, live your way is the negotiability element of life. And so when you're in a situation that you feel like is not going well or you don't belong in, the important thing to do is to get a handle on that and to make arrangements to get to a new place. Now, with Jupiter, the benefit can easily be lost. So you don't want to lose the benefit of Jupiter, and you want to know how good you have it, and also be paying attention to the benefit that people are offering you. In other words, it's not always clear what a good deal you might have, and you may be seeing that negative sides or taking a kind of a cup is half empty approach. However, it may turn out that you're actually doing pretty well and didn't realize it. And so this is why you want to preserve what you have. You want to do the number one thing of Dharma, which is to act as if to hold the world together and not be fraying anything or taking advantage of situations, but rather, I would suggest being a little more inclined to let situations take advantage of you and to be the advantage. In other words, be the benefit that someone else is getting through your presence, and that is it's a hedge against the instability of the world, and it is something that you have control over also. And so all of this, including Saturn, calls for the kind of maturity that requires delayed gratification and that requires sensitivity to the needs of other people and really being a mutual person. Now, by the way, I haven't mentioned yet that in this discussion, where so much comes back to professional conduct and how you're going to meet your goals, the eclipses are moving on to the Taurus-Scorpio axis. The Taurus-Scorpio axis is your axis of achievement and security. It's the 10th and the 4th, so we know a little bit about the 10th. They're going to, from previous parts of this reading, the 4th house is relationship to it is that it's the foundation of your life and how you might feel safe. And now the eclipses are coming. And so this is promising rapid changes in a way that's not so comfortable for fixed sign people, but it's also promising the relief from situations that have not worked well in the past. It is letting off pressure, and you'll have opportunities to make changes. But while you're making these changes, one thing I think above all else needs to be consistent, which is that you bring your full faith and credit, that you bring your devotion and your willingness to put everything into getting an outcome that works for everyone mutually. Now, speaking of mutual, one of the most interesting features of the Leo pattern of signs is that Aries comes up on the ninth house. That's the house after the eighth. That the eighth is the house of agreements. The ninth is the house of your cosmology, your worldview, your sense of the planet as a thing that you can explore. And then this also reaches into your religious concepts, right? There's cosmology, worldview. The ninth includes things like sacred sites and traveling to them and theoria type of journeys to consult the oracle or to meet with a teacher. And what is so interesting is that you have Aries on this house, which is saying that in a sense, you are the central figure in your own personal religion. Now, this comports beautifully with something like Gestalt therapy theory, which says, yeah, the world's got to be about you. It's your life. You're at the center of your universe. And so this is something that is easy to work with. It is an easy idea to understand that the world is about us, and that our growth and maturity and evolving into a relationship with one's higher power is a process that requires growth and self-actualization. So it is more accurate to say that if you're really paying attention, that your personal religion is not so much yourself, but your self-actualization. And Aries comes with that tropism. It's a very handy sign in a way, because it's going to compel a level of self-development no matter where it lands, and where it's landing is on your house associated with matters of a spiritual nature. But it's easy to slip and think that, well, maybe this really all is about you and not your process of actualizing, and this is where to put some extra attention. You have the blessing right now of Chiron in Aries in your ninth house. And what this is doing is providing you the reference framework for your life being about your healing process, your self-actualization being about your healing process. And you are well set up to learn a lot here, to be able to focus your progress on growing. And while there's so much going on in so many other houses, it is fair to say that that Aries for you may be the place to reach, and the staging area from which you want to live your whole life. Because if you are doing the work of Chiron, if you are doing the work of your self-actualization, that's going to encompass everything else that I've been talking about, including your relationships and how you engage with your mutual contractual responsibilities, and ensuring that you see yourself in an honest and accurate way that serves both you and, by extension, the people around you. With the rest of this reading, or most of it, I'd like to talk about the interplay between the social environment and the business environment as it's manifesting in your chart. As you know, both the social and the business environments in the world are growing increasingly hostile and seem to be based on all kinds of propped up ideas of scarcity and of dangers and threats and hostility. And there's generally, it would seem, a subtle or not so subtle sense of panic going around, with everyone thinking they're entitled to their thing to panic over and therefore to take it out on other people. I don't recommend this. Your chart reflects this this issue in some interesting ways. For one thing, you do have good social survival skills, but it is important to get past that level. However, those social survival skills are going to come in handy for you in 2022. Among the things indicating some of the, the stress will be a retrograde Mars in Gemini later in the year. Retrograde Mars, is an important thing. It's a process that lasts about 6 months, and so it's going to go basically, I think, that 6 months will span from something like mid to late-ish summer well into the winter, when the whole duration of Mars's time in Gemini, which is your 11th house. Now, the 11th house is so important because it is the house both of your friendships and your professional associations, and also it is the house associated with the rewards of the work that you are doing. It is the second of the 10th, and so it is therefore the house of the benefits we get from doing 10th house type of work. Now, we've already said that this 10th house high-level stuff is in a humbler form right now, grounding itself in the 6th house of what you do every day. But let's keep in mind that you do have, or would benefit from, if you don't, having some higher level aspirations that you want to reach for. But in any event, the 11th is social, first and foremost. It's about your friends and the friends of your friends, and it's about where you hang out and what you like to do. And you like it to be pretty open and airy, and people being free to associate with one another, and not a lot of pecking order related stuff. And you like social attention. But the challenge here is that all of the previous forms of socializing have been completely bollocked up. And this is especially true for people who have even meekly alternative ideas about what should be going on. We are in a time when we are being told that unless we accept the very most extreme ideas about what is right and what is wrong and who is right and who is wrong, that we're really part of the other side. And I would deeply encourage you to not fall for any of this. And there have been very few experiences in your life when an extreme or all or nothing approach got a result for you or for anyone trying to take that approach. And when you talk about extreme things, we're talking about things like various forms of the final solution. So anything that sounds like it might have the final solution to it, check your watch and ask yourself what time it is. Ask yourself if this makes any sense right now and why someone might be motivated to be spewing these kinds of perfectly, ridiculous notions. Now, the exciting thing is that your social possibilities are rather portable. And the reason for that is because you have Gemini on the 11th house. And Gemini is a pretty portable sign. It's really the house of local movement. So it has that to it. And then Gemini itself is a communicative air sign. And it is mobile in that it can embrace both sides of the issue. I think that, when we actually evaluate who you are as a person, you're not partial to people based on what side they're on. If you were a Mets fan, you wouldn't hate Yankees fans and things like that. However, we are being pushed and pushed hard right now. And there are options being closed off, and this is all ridiculous. However, you still have to adapt to it. And so there's a series of maneuvers I'm going to suggest, which is that that you follow the retrogrades of Mercury, and where those retrogrades of Mercury take you, that you find something of a kind of a new home, and that you keep going where the action is. That you keep essentially become a bit socially migratory, and find the people where they are, and I can give you a clue how that might look. So first of all, the first Mercury retrograde of this era and of this year basically happens in January, and this is suggesting that you want to stick with your closest partnerships, and not necessarily venturing too far outside the brood or off the reservation, but stick with people and work out your relationships. Really work out your relationships. Review, make adjustments, pay attention to what you're doing, what you want, what you need, and keep asking the question, how does this work for everyone? Does this work for everyone? These are important questions. You'd be surprised who doesn't really care if anything works for everyone or not. You need to care. And this is going to be worked out in one-on-one situations, never really with a group. All group relationships are made of dyadic relationships. Then in the spring, that is more of an out and about time where you are potentially going to look in all the normal places where you might have socialized, whatever that might be, whatever it is that you might do. I mean, I think in Leo's mind, the establishments that you like to frequent comes to mind, except that you may find that those are not necessarily what they were or what you want them to be. And so the emphasis of the spring Mercury retrograde is about professional associations. So it is socializing specifically for the purpose of making new professional associations. In other words, it's not strictly to go out and have fun, but you want to have fun. But then on the other hand, you have to understand why exactly you're having the fun and who exactly you might meet there. And it's probably more likely to go out, trolling for dates than it is trolling for professional opportunities. And trolling is only part of it. The other part of it is taking any advantage where there is something social that is also professional, perhaps something that colleagues are doing or something that your company is doing, perhaps something that a friend's colleagues or company is doing, and get yourself into as many of those situations as possible. And, keep your conduct becoming of an officer and stick to the real conversation. Stick to the serious conversations and the people who are looking to make progress of some kind. Now, there is an opening here, and it is it's associated with the lunar node and the eclipses. But you really want to be paying attention through that spring Mercury retrograde, and showing up completely and ready for professional activity. Know what you want, know what you're interested in, collect business cards, present yourself well, and generally be ready to encounter the people who will help you succeed. Then in the autumn, there's a Mercury retrograde, and this one is more about getting yourself organized financially. And so everything leads in this direction, and you can certainly get that set up much more in advance. And this is always going to be a kind of a long-range, long-term process. The retrograde goes, they all go air to earth this year, and the one in the spring goes Libra to Virgo. Now, Virgo for you is interesting because it indicates the typical kinds of financial questions that you have. And it Virgo on the second calls for a high level of financial organization, but not being penny wise and pound foolish. Like, this is the problem of Virgo on the second, is that it will, you know, conserve on all the small things and then do something that's not necessary on with some big things. So you want to keep a grip on that and make sure that you have a balance between necessity and pleasure and wants and needs, and that you are well enough guided that you have some sounding board. Now, there is, you know, sounding board, and you can evolve a conversation and get clear about your ideas. And the challenge for you, though, right now is that there's an influence coming through Virgo, which can be a kind of a constricting influence, and it's trans-Pluto. And that could lead you to be cheap in ways where you need to be making an investment. Now, you don't want to be, obviously, overdoing it, but you have to know what problems can be solved by money and which problems cannot be solved by money. And there's only so much making do that you can do. So I would say, for example, where your most basic professional equipment is concerned, websites, computers, this kind of thing, you want to make sure that you are in sync and in step, and slightly overpowered. Not tons and tons overpowered, but slightly overpowered, that you have room to grow into what you're doing. Now, where you're the most likely to slip up is where your commitments and involvements to others come in. And so you can potentially, I think you've got everything taken care of on your end of the arrangement, but at the same time be very myopic. And then either not really understand your environment, or which means that you might mishandle your affairs, or there might be a failure of clarity on the contractual end of things. And so this is why it's essential to understand all agreements and contracts from both ends. That is to say, what you give and how you benefit, and what someone else gives and how someone else benefits. You have to be working the mutual side of that, because it's very easy for you to only see your side of things and then to lose sight of the many other factors that are coming to bear on the scenario. And this would be a time to impose proper bookkeeping structure. I think this is the most fundamental part of any successful business or successful person, is that they know how much money they have. They can tell the difference between their plastic and their cash. They know the difference between debt and assets. And so this would be a great year for you to do that and to really get your tax affairs in order and to get your business plan in order. And this doesn't necessarily happen over time, and there's many ways to do business plans, and they do not all have to be so granular. They can be they need to be specific enough that everything you do is connected to some platform plank in your business plan. Now, remember that you are evolving as a person, and your business plan has to evolve to reflect your self-actualization. And you might say that self-actualization is going to precede the business plan. It's going to precede the self that you bring into your relationships, commitments, and contracts and agreements is the self that you bring in. So you want to be bringing in your most contemporary, most evolved self, and then also making sure that the whole arrangement follows that. Right. And this is, I get that there's the sense of the ground moving all the time, and there's the sense of even at times movement so fast you don't know what's going on, or that you might feel like you're not walking around on anything solid, but rather walking around on quicksand. And so this is why the solid, stable place has to be your self-awareness, and it has to be your healing process. And everything must then be subject to your self-awareness and your healing process. And so you that includes, you understand, you make mistakes, and then, okay, what do you do with those mistakes once you make one? How do you work out the mistakes that other people make? When you come up to a limit, how do you negotiate the limit? And the diversity of forces acting on you is so spread across the spectrum that the only thing they could all have in common is your staying centered in yourself, your mission, your healing, and your growth. And there's no way to emphasize the thoroughness and the depth at which it will benefit you to go through this, because in the end, everything is a reflection of your integrity or lack thereof. And the only way that you guide your life is by making decisions, and the only way you can really make decisions is by knowing and understanding who you are, and knowing and understanding the basis for making those choices. So this is very conscious stuff in a time when we are constantly being lulled to sleep. I mean, for example, it is fair to say that nearly all of the images people have of themselves are pictures that have been put in their minds by the media. Many people talk like they're on television, using words and phrases they learned in commercials. They aspire to be like the people on television. They aspire to be like the people in the movies. The new replacement for that is the Instagram-y kind of a things, where people get very confused about the difference between their image and their reality. And all the forces in your life right now are wanting to strip down your image to your reality. Chiron working its way through your most spiritual house and your house of self-awareness, the ninth house. Varuna in your first house calling on you to honor your agreements and not make any agreements that you can't honor, and to get out of the ones that you can't honor. While we're talking about fire signs, you've been through a long series of eclipse events in Sagittarius, which is your fifth house, which is in a way insisting that you thread the needle between what is pleasurable for you, what is creative for you, and what is spiritually nourishing for you, and that everything you do for fun should cover at least two of those requirements, and maybe even all three. I think so. Of all the solar charts I've seen, when I'm now at the halfway mark in this process, Leo is the sign offering the most serious and sobering messages of all of them, based on the way that the houses fall and the themes arrange themselves. And the beauty of these charts, though, is in the clarity of the message. So, for example, if we just sum up houses 7, 8, and 9, well, house 7 is Aquarius with Saturn, and that is a get serious message. And it is a establish boundaries, clear space, and make sure that you're only in the relationships that you belong in. The eighth house is the next house, and this is where exchanges actually happen. And with Neptune there and Nessus, this is calling for having boundaries. Jupiter is going to provide a temporary but large presence in this house between essentially the last days of 21 into 20 into 2022 into about May, and this is saying you have to understand the nature of your relationships, and that nature of your relationships is not going to be something that just makes itself easily seen. It's going to take work. And then if we go to the ninth house, this is the house of Aries, spirituality, self-actualization. Chiron there is saying, okay, this can all be summed up in a way that is very simple. You are responsible for yourself. You are responsible for who you are. You are responsible for your healing process and for focusing on your personal actualization process. And if you can do that, that effect is going to cascade around the entire zodiac into all the other houses, because you're the one thing that they all have in common. You show up in every house at some different time. But to my eye, the place where you live right now is Chiron in the ninth house. Chiron in the ninth house is saying that there is a quest, there is the necessity for self-understanding, there is necessity to pull yourself back in from all of this projection that's been going on the internet, to keep yourself in your body, to be strong in your sense of I am. And when you say things like I want and I am, exercising this while being flexible but still being willing to assert yourself and exercise this, all factors of Chiron in the ninth. And one more spiritual factor that's there, which is to shed yourself of this salacious concept of sexuality and find out what it means to have a more underlying maturity be the thing that is driving your sexuality, rather than all of the image that we have been drowning in. You know, initially when we were younger, in all of these advertisements that essentially turned every product into a thing that you were supposed to get sex if you purchased it. And then now with the internet, where you know you don't have to go anywhere before you're tripping over some more salacious message. And underneath all of that is, I won't say it's a different quest for maturity and self-actualization, but it's a little bit deeper level than what you might normally get with Chiron. And there will be tremendous benefit from bringing your sexuality into your concept of all that is spiritual and leaving it there and not ever letting it get out, never losing that focus on the profound importance of sexuality in your life, and the profound need to bring integrity to your sexuality. And I would propose to you that integrity is not about how many times you can say no or resist what you want, but rather integrity is about when you place things in the context of your personal growth mission and of your healing process. And so then the question becomes, does this person serve my growth? Does this experience serve my growth in some way? It's easy to say, will I have fun? But that's always going to be followed up by the question of, oh, did this serve my growth? And so, of course, you can ask that in advance. And in the way of Tantra, this is something that will reach into every facet of what we call reality and what we call existence. I look forward to seeing you over at Your Rising Sign. If you have access, if you absolutely want to hear that and you can't afford it, write to me and let me know. Otherwise, we're making it pretty easy to get there. Between the sun and the rising signs, you can put together a pretty good composite of what you might think of as the whole picture. Okay, thank you again for your business, your trust, and your time. And I'll catch you a little bit down the road. Bye for now.